girl's servant. He laughed and laughed, and then he said, "In 1,000 lives of men, I have never been anyone's servant." He gave her another long look, "and it will enrage my brother." She bit her lip. "You have my oath, Vasilisa Petrovna." He put his bound wrist to his mouth and bit his hand suddenly, just where finger met thumb. Blood, clear and sulfur-smelling, welled out. He put out a thick-fingered hand. "What does your blood do to someone who is not dead?" she asked. "Karachun told you, did he?" he said. "It gives you life, wild girl. Haven't I sworn not to harm you?" She hesitated and then clasped his hand, her blood sluggish on his skin, his blood stinging where it touched. She felt a jolt of unpleasant energy burning away her weariness. Pulling her hand away, she said, "If you are forsworn, then back to this tree you will go, tied hand and foot and throat with this golden thing. And I will put out your other eye, and you may live in darkness." "You were such a sweet child when I first met you by this very tree," remarked the bear. "What happened?" His voice was mocking, but she could feel the tension in him when she began to undo the golden clasps. "What happened? Love, betrayal, and time," said Vasya. "What happens to anyone who grows to understand you, Medved? Living happens." Her hands slid along the oily gold, working at the buckles. She wondered briefly how Kashche had made it. Somewhere, perhaps, there was an answer. Somewhere there were secrets of magic beyond the setting of fires, the seeing of Cherti. One day, perhaps, she would learn them in far countries, beneath wilder skies. Then the gold slithered away, all in a rush. The bear was very still, flexing his unbound hands with a disbelief he couldn't quite conceal. She got to her feet. The gold was in two pieces, what had been the reins and the headstall of the bridle. She wrapped them around her wrists, a terrible prince's ransom, shining. The bear rose and stood beside her. His back was straight. His eye glittered. "Come then, mistress," he said, half-mocking. "Where shall we go?" "To my brother," said Vasya grimly, "while it is still midnight, and he is still alive. But first..." She turned, seeking in the darkness. "Polunochnitsa," she said. She had no doubts of her guess, and indeed, the midnight demon stepped at once into the clearing. Voron's great hooves crunched the bracken at her back. "You betrayed me," said Vasya. "But you understood at last," said Polunochnitsa. "It was never your task to pick out the good from the wicked. Your task was to unite us. We are one people." The rage was gone from her face. Vasya stalked forward. "You could have told me. They tormented my brother." "It is not something you can be told," said Polunochnitsa. "It is something you must come to understand." Her great-grandmother had said the same. Vasya could feel the bear watching. He breathed out a laugh as she, wordless, unspooled the golden rope, snapped it out, caught Polunochnitsa around the throat. The midnight demon tried to wrench back, but couldn't, caught by the power in the gold. She made a single, shocked sound and stood still, wide-eyed. Vasya said, "I do not like being betrayed, Polunochnitsa. You took no pity on me after the fire. You had no pity on my brother. Perhaps I should leave you tied to a tree." The black stallion reared, squealing. Vasya didn't move, though the great hooves were a hand's breadth from her face. "I will take her with me, Voron, if you kill me." The horse subsided, and Vasya had to harden her heart. Midnight was looking at her with genuine fear. Nedved owes me allegiance now, and so do you, Polunochnitsa. You will not betray me again. The midnight demon was staring at her with horror and unwilling fascination. You are Baba Yaga's heir in truth now, she said. When you have finished with the dealings of men, go back to the lake. At midnight, the witch will be waiting. I am not finished yet, Basia said grimly. I am going to save my brother. You are going to swear an oath to me as well, Lady Midnight, and you are going to help me. I am sworn to your great-grandmother, and as you said, I am her heir. Their eyes locked, a silent battle of wills. Midnight was the first to lower hers. I swear then, she said. What do you swear? To serve you and to heed you and never to betray you again. Vasya, with a snap, freed Polunochnitsa of the golden rope. I swear to sustain you as I can, she said, with blood and with memory. We can no longer afford to fight amongst ourselves. The bear said lightly from behind, I think I am going to enjoy this. Chapter 30. The Enemy of My Enemy. Sasha was only vaguely aware of what happened after he threw Chelebe from the saddle. He hadn't been thinking clearly when he did it. Merely that there was a sword and his sister's vulnerable throat, and he hated the Tatar as he'd never hated anyone in his life. Hated his impersonal cruelties, his clever mind, his soft questions. So, when the Tatar drew up alongside them, Sasha saw an opening and didn't hesitate, but he was wounded and Chelubé strong. A blow to his jaw shot sparks across his sight, and then Chelubé shouted over Sasha's head, urging other men on. Sasha dragged himself to his knees, saw his sister, still mounted, wheeling her horse to come back for him. Vasya, he tried to shout. Run! Then the world went dark. When he came to, he was still lying on the ground. Chelubé stood over him. She's gone, Sasha heard a voice say. Disappeared. He let out a breath of relief, just as Chelubé drew back and kicked him in the ribs. The bone cracked. Sasha doubled up, lacking the breath to scream. I think, said Chelubé, that after the night's excitement, the general will have no further objections to you dying while I torture you. Get him on his feet. But the men weren't looking down at Sasha anymore. They were backing up with expressions of horror. The road back through midnight was short. Vasya's blood cried out for her brother, and Pozhar had no objection to galloping through the forest at reckless speed. Voron raced alongside them. The black stallion was far swifter than any mortal horse, but still he labored to match the golden mare's pace. Vasya mourned in silence, even as she savored the strength of the mare beneath her. The Firebird was not, and never would be, her other self. And Pozhar's grace reminded Vasya of her loss all over again. The bear paced the horses in silence. He had let go the shape of a man. He ran as a great shadow beast, nourished by her blood. As they went, he sniffed at the sky, barely containing a bared teeth eagerness. Hoping for killing? Said Vasya. No, said the bear. I care not for the dead. Mine are the suffering living. Our task is to save my brother, Vasya said sharply, not to make people suffer. Are you so quickly forsworn, Nedved? The two pieces of golden rope shimmered eerily on her wrists. He shot them a dark look and said, a growl just entering his voice, I have promised. Ahead, said Midnight. Vasya squinted into the darkness. Fires broke up the night in front of them. The wind brought them the smell of men and horses. Vasya sat back and Pozhar slowed, grudgingly. Her nostrils flared, disliking the smell of men. I left my brother on the north side of the camp, not far from a stream, said Vasya to Polunochnitsa. Is he still there? In answer, Midnight slid down from her horse, put a light hand on the stallion's neck, whispered. Voron reared up against the sky, mane flying lightly as feathers, and then a raven flew into the night. Solovey never did that, Vasya said, watching the black horse change and fly. Take his other form. He was too young, said Midnight. A colt still. The young ones only change with difficulty. He'd have learned to control his own nature if... He'd had time, Vasya finished flatly. The bear glanced at her, half-smiling, as though he could taste the hurt. We must follow Voron, said Midnight. Get up behind me then, said Vasya, unless... Pozhar, do you mind? The mare looked as though she were considering saying no, just to remind them that she could. Very well, she said irritably, switching her tail. Vasya put an arm down. The chariot seemed to weigh nothing at all. Riding double on the mare, they surged forward, the bear at Pozhar's flank. Ahead, the trees thinned, and a single raven croaked from the darkness. The Tatars were still where she'd left them. Some were still mounted, others stood in a ragged circle. Two reached down, heaving, and Vasya glimpsed the dim shape of her brother being dragged to his feet. He was limp, his head hung down. Can you frighten them off? Said Vasya to the bear, hearing her voice shake, quite beyond her control. Perhaps, mistress, said Medved, and grinned his vast dog grin at her. Do keep panicking. It helps me. She just stared at him, stone-faced, and he relented. Do something else useful, then. See that tree there? Set it afire. A flicker of remembered fire, and the tree burst into flames. It was disturbing how easy it had become. Being near the bear fanned the chaos in her own heart. His eye found hers. It would do you good to go mad, he murmured. It would make it easier. You could do any magic you pleased if you were mad. Storms and lightning and noonday darkness. Be silent, she said. The fire on the tree grew bigger, sending out a sweep of golden light. Reality wavered. She dug her nails into her palms and whispered her own name to make it stop. She forced her voice to calm. Are you going to frighten them off or not? Still smiling, the bear turned wordless toward the huddle of men and began to creep closer. Their horses backed up. Nostrils flared. Wide-eyed, the men faced the night, swords in their hands. Within the firelight, a shadow grew, a strange, crawling, mutable shadow, slinking toward men and horses, the shadow of an unseen beast. The bear's soft voice seemed to come from the shadow itself. Interfere with my servant, he whispered. Lay hands on what is mine. You'll die for it. You'll die screaming. His voice got into the men's ears, got into their minds. His shadow crawled nearer, sending twisted shapes dancing across the fire-beaten ground. The men were trembling. A soft, unearthly snarl filled the night. The shadows seemed to spring. At the same moment, a flicker of memory from Vasya made the flames leap in the burning tree. The men's nerve broke. They fled, mounted or afoot, until there was only one alone, standing over her brother's prone form, shouting at the running men. They had let Sasha fall as they escaped. The single man was Chelube. Vasya nudged Pozhar then and rode into the light. Chelube blanched. His sword blade dipped. I warned them, he said. Oleg and Mamai, those fools. I warned them. Vasya gave him a dazzling smile, without warmth. You shouldn't have told them I was a girl. Then they might have believed that I was dangerous. Bojar's eyes were embers, her mane smoke and sparks. A touch to her flank drove the mare into a rear. She lashed out with her forefeet, and even Chelebe's nerve broke then. He fled, leaped to his own horse's back, shot away. Pojar, half-maddened, sprang in pursuit. Vasya curbed her after a few bolting strides. Her blood was up. She had to fight her own urge, as well as the mare's, to ride Chelebe down. It was as though the bear's presence goaded them both to rashness. Well, he could goad all he liked. Vasya would make decisions for herself. "My brother," she said, seizing control of herself, and Pojar was persuaded with difficulty to turn. The bear looked mildly disappointed. Ignoring him, Vasya dropped to the ground at her brother's side. Sasha was curled up, arms wrapped around his body. Blood showed on his mouth, on his back, black in the firelight. But he was alive. "Sasha," she said, cradling his head. "Bratishka." Slowly he looked up. "I told you to run," he croaked. "I came back."
"That was disappointingly easy," said the bear from behind her. "What now?"
Sasha tried to sit up, made a small sound of pain. "No," Vasya said. "No, don't be afraid. He helped me." She was feeling her brother over gently. The blood on his hand and back had gone cold and sticky, and his breath was short with pain. But she could find no fresh wounds. "Sasha," she said, "I must go into the camp and find Vladimir Andreevich. Can you stand? You can't stay here."
"I think I can stand," he said.
He tried, struggling. Once he put his weight on his injured hand and made a sound not far from a scream. But he got himself upright, leaning heavily on her. She staggered under his weight. Her brother was barely conscious. Perhaps that was a blessing, considering how he'd feel about her allies. "Will you take him up on Voron?" Vasya asked Polunochnitsa, "and hide him from the Tatars?"
"You want me to nursemaid a monk?" Polunochnitsa asked, disbelieving.
Then her expression turned curious. It occurred to Vasya that a Chert might be persuaded to try any unusual thing just to relieve the boredom of eternity. "Swear you won't hurt him, or allow him to be hurt, or frighten him," Vasya said. "Meet us here. We are going to get my cousin." At that, Sasha croaked. "Am I a nursing babe, Vasya, that she must swear all those oaths? Who is this?"
"Travel by midnight would awaken the sight in even a monk," put in the bear. "That is interesting."
Reluctantly, Vasya answered Sasha. "Lady Midnight,
the one who hates you,
we came to an arrangement." Midnight gave Sasha an appraising look.
"I swear it, Vasilisa Petrovna. Come, monk, and get on my horse."
Vasya wasn't sure of the wisdom of trusting Midnight with her brother, but she had little choice.
"Come on," she said to the bear.
"We have to free the Prince of Sierpukhov, and then we must persuade Oleg Vryazan that he is fighting for the wrong side." Following her, the bear said reflectively, "I might even enjoy that, although it rather depends on your method of persuasion." Vasya's fires had burned down to scarlet embers, but they glowed on every hand, illuminating the Tatar encampment with a hellish light. Weary men were catching the foam-streaked horses and whispering among themselves. The air of unease was palpable. The bear surveyed the remains of turmoil with a critical eye.
"Admirable," he said. "I'll make a creature of chaos of you yet."
She feared she was already halfway there, but she was not saying that to him. The bear said,
"What do you mean to do?"
Vasya told him her plan. He laughed.
"A few shambling corpses would be better. Nothing better for getting people to do what you want."
"We are not disturbing any more dead souls," snapped Vasya.
"You may find it tempting before the end."
"Not tonight," said Vasya. "Can you set fires yourself?"
"Yes, and put them out too. Fear and fire are my tools, sweet maiden. Can you smell my cousin? Russian blood? He asked. Do you think me a witch in a fairy tale?
Yes or no?
He lifted his head and snuffed the night. Yes, he said, growling a little. Yes, I suppose I can.
Vasya turned to have a quick word with Pozhar. Then she followed the bear into the Tatar camp on foot. As she did, she took a deep breath and forgot that she was anything but a shadow, walking beside another shadow, one with teeth. Invisibly, they slipped into the chaos of the camp, and the bear, in his element, seemed to grow. He moved unerringly through the noise, the little knots of still frightened horses, and where he passed, the horses shied and fires flared. Men turned clammy faces toward the darkness. He grinned at them, blew sparks into their clothes. Enough, said Vasya. Find my cousin, or I will bind you with more than just promises.
There is more than one Russian here, said the bear irritably. I can't.
He caught her eye and finished almost meekly, except for a hint of sudden laughter in his eyes.
But that one smells like the far north.
She followed him, quicker now. Finally, he halted near the center of the camp. Instinctively, she wanted to flatten herself, hiding in the shadow of a round tent, but that would mean she believed the soldiers could see her. They couldn't. She held that thought and stayed where she was. A bound man was kneeling, silhouetted, beside a well-tended fire. All around, soldiers were soothing their restive horses. Three men stood near the fire, arguing. With the light behind them, it took her a moment to recognize Mamai and Chelebey and Oleg. She wished she could understand what they were saying.
They are deciding whether or not to kill him, said the beast beside her. It seems your escape has made them wary.
You understand Tatar?
I understand the speech of men, said the bear,
just as a dazzle of fresh light poured over the camp, panicking the horses all over again. Vasya didn't look up. She knew what she would see. Pozhar soaring overhead, streaming smoke, her fiery wings making arcs of scarlet and blue, gold and white.
I can't make the earth catch fire like I did in the city, Pozhar had said when Vasya asked. I was so angry. I was maddened with anger. I can't do it again.
You don't have to, Vasya returned. Just dazzle them. It will send a message to my countrymen. She patted the horse comfortingly, and Pozhar bit her on the shoulder. Now, all around the camp, men looked to the sky. A babble of renewed talk broke out. She heard the snap of bowstrings, saw a few arrows arc up into the night, but Pozhar was keeping out of range. A wondering cry, quickly silenced, rose from one of the Russians.
Zhar ptitsa!
Can you make it so they can see you? Vasya asked the bear, not taking her eyes off the general.
With your blood, he said.
She gave him her grazed hand. He clung greedily. Then she yanked her fingers back again.
At the right moment, then, she said.
Holding fast to the knowledge that they could not see her, she crept into the light. The three men were still arguing, shouting at each other now, while the bird, shining, impossible, soared overhead. Vasya walked up behind them, unspooled her golden rope, and wrapped it around Mamai's throat. He managed a choked gasp, and then he froze, caught by Kashche's magic and her own will. Everyone in sight froze, too. They could see her now.
Good evening, said Vasya.
It was hard to get the breath to speak steadily. The eyes of 24 expert bowmen were on her. Many of them already had arrows up.
You can't kill me before I kill him, she said to them, even if you fill me with arrows.
In one hand, she had the golden rope, but in the other was her knife pressed to Mamai's throat. She thought she heard Oleg's voice interpreting, but she didn't look around to see. Chelubey had drawn his sword. He took one furious step toward her, then stopped at Mamai's wordless, pained sound.
I am here for the Prince of Sierpukhov, said Vasya.
Mamai made another inarticulate croak and then said something that sounded like an order.
Silence! She snapped,
and he stood rigid when she pressed the dagger a little more into his neck. Oleg was gaping at her like a landed fish. Above them, the firebird cried again, wheeling, bright against the clouds. The Tatar's horses plunged. Out of the corner of her eye, Vasya glimpsed men, as though despite themselves, lifting their faces to the light.
Chelubey was the first to recover his wits. You won't leave here alive, girl.
If I don't, said Vasya, and Vladimir Andreevich doesn't, then your leader doesn't either. Will you risk it?
Loose your arrows,
snapped Chelubey, as Vasya gashed the general's throat just hard enough to make him cry out. Copper-smelling blood ran over her hands. The bowman hesitated. Medved took advantage of the moment to come strolling out of the night, a vast shadow bear. A hell light of amusement shone in his good eye. A single bowstring twanged, the shot wild. Then a terrified stillness fell. Vasya spoke into the silence.
Free the prince of Sierpukhov, or I will set the whole camp afire and lame every horse, and he will eat what's left.
She jerked her chin at the bear. The beast obligingly bared his teeth. Mamai croaked something. His men hurried. Next moment, the man from the river, her sister's husband, was coming warily toward her. He seemed unhurt. His eyes widened when he recognized the boy by the water. Vasya said, Vladimir Andreevich. He looked as though he thought the rescue might be worse than the captivity. She tried to reassure him.
Dmitri Ivanovich sent me, she said. Are you all right? Can you ride?
He dipped his chin in a wary nod, crossed himself. No one moved.
Come with me, said Vasya to her cousin.
He did, still looking uncertain. She began to back up, still holding onto Mamai by the golden rope. Oleg had not spoken, but he was watching her very intently. She took a deep breath.
Now, she said to the bear.
Every fire in the encampment went out at once, every lamp and torch. The firebird was the only light, soaring overhead. Then Pojar swooped low, and the horses all plunged at their pickets again, neighing shrilly. Over the din, in the darkness, Vasya whispered in the general's ear,
Continue on this course and you will die. Rus will have no conquerors.
She thrust him into the arms of his men, caught her cousin's hand, and pulled him into the shadows, just as three bows twanged. But she had already vanished into the night, and with her, the bear and Vladimir Andreevich. The bear was laughing as they ran.
They were so frightened of a little skinny witch girl. It was delicious. Oh, we will teach this whole land to fear before the end.
He turned his good eye on her and added censoriously,
You should have cut the leader's throat properly. He will live, none the worse.
They gave me my cousin. In honor, I could not. The bear whooped unpleasantly.
Hear the girl. The Grand Prince of Moscow gives her a task, and she decides on the spot that she's a boyar, stuffed to the brim with the courtesies of war. How long will it take you to learn better, I wonder?
Vasya said nothing. Instead, she turned aside at a horse line just at the edge of camp, cut a picket, said,
Here, Vladimir Andreevich, mount up.
Vladimir didn't move. His eyes were on the bear.
What black devilry is this?
Happily, the bear said,
The worst kind.
Vladimir made the sign of the cross with a hand that shook. Someone shouted in Tatar. Vasya whipped round and saw that Medved, enjoying their terror, had made himself visible against the sky. Vladimir Andreevich was on the edge of fleeing back to his enemies. Furious, Vasya uncoiled a golden rope and said,
Are we allies or no, Medved? I am getting tired of you. Oh, I do not like that thing, said the bear,
but his mouth closed. He seemed to shrink. Men were coming nearer.
"Get on the horse," Vasya said to Vladimir. There was no saddle or bridle, but the Prince of Sierpukhov heaved himself to the gelding's back just as Vasya vaulted onto a piebald mare.
"Who are you?" whispered Vladimir, his voice cold with fright.
"I am Olga's younger sister," said Vasya. "Go." She slapped the haunch of Vladimir's mount, and then they were away, over the grass, dodging between sparse trees, seeking the dark, and leaving the Tatars at last behind them. The bear laughed at her as they galloped away.
"Now, don't tell me you didn't enjoy that," he said.
Answering laughter rose in her, the giddy joy of striking fear in her enemies' hearts. She tamped it down, but not before her eyes met the gaze of the King of Chaos, and she saw her own reckless delight reflected there. Sasha and Midnight were just where Vasya had left them, double-mounted on Voron. Pozhar met them there, too, in the form of a horse. Her every footfall made sparks. Her eye was molten. Vasya felt a surge of relief at the sight of them.
"Brother Alexander," said Vladimir, still sputtering, "can it be?"
"Vladimir Andreevich," said Sasha, "Vasya." And to her surprise, Sasha slid down Voron's back just as she got off her Tatar mare. They embraced.
"Sasha," she said, "how?"
His back had been bound and his hand. He moved stiffly, but not in a haze of pain. He glanced back at Polunochnitsa. "We rode into the dark," he said, frowning as though it were hard to remember. "I was barely conscious. There was the sound of water on rock, a house that smelled of honey and garlic, and an old woman there who bound my back. She said she preferred daughters, but that I would do. Would I like to stay? I don't know what I answered. I slept. I don't know how long, but every time I woke, it was still midnight. Then Polunochnitsa came and said I had slept long enough, and she brought me back. It seems like the old woman called after us, sadly, but I might have dreamed it."
Vasya raised an eyebrow at Polunochnitsa. "You took him to the lake? How long was he there?"
"Long enough," said Midnight, unrepentant.
"You didn't think it would send him mad?" Vasya asked, with an edge.
"No," said Polunochnitsa. "He was asleep mostly, and also he is very like you." She gave Sasha a proprietary look. "Besides, he couldn't sit upright and reeked of blood, and that irritated me. It was easier to let the witch fix him. She regrets Tamara, you know, as much as she is angry."
Vasya said, "It was kind then, my friend, to the midnight demon." Polunochnitsa looked simultaneously suspicious and pleased.
"You have met our great-grandmother," Vasya added to her brother. "She is a madwoman who lives in midnight. She is cruel and lonely, and sometimes kind."
"The old woman?" said Sasha.
No, surely not. Our great-grandmother must be dead."
"She is," said Vasya, "but that doesn't matter in midnight."
Sasha looked thoughtful. "I would go back when this is over. Cruel or no, she seemed to know a great many things."
"Perhaps we can go together," said Vasya.
"Perhaps," said Sasha. They grinned at each other, like children contemplating adventures instead of a witch and a monk on the cusp of battle.
Vladimir Andreevich was shooting them both black looks.
"Brother Alexander," he broke in stiffly, making the sign of the cross, "this is a strange meeting."
"God be with you," said Sasha.
"And what in God's name," began the Prince of Sierpukhov, before Vasya interjected hastily.
"Sasha will explain," she said, "while I perform one last errand. If we are fortunate, we will have company on the way north."
"Better hurry," said the bear. He was looking critically over the Tatar camp, where they had begun relighting their fires. Pozhar's ears twitched at the faint noise of their furious shouting. "They're like a stirred-up beehive. You're coming with me," she told him. "I don't trust you out of my sight." Quite right, said the bear, and looked up at the sky with a sigh of pleasure. When Oleg of Ryazan came back to his tent at last, he looked like a man who'd lived eternities in one night. He pushed the flap aside, walked in, and stood silent a moment. Vasya let out a soft breath, and his clay lamp flared to life. Oleg looked utterly unsurprised. If the general finds you, he will kill you slowly. She stepped into the lamplight. He is not going to find me. I came back for you.
Did you?
You have seen the firebird in the sky, she said. You have seen flames in the night and horses running mad. You have seen the bear in the shadows. You have seen our strength. Your men are already whispering of the strange power of the Grand Prince of Moscow that has reached even into the camp of the Tatar.
Strange power?
Perhaps Dmitri Ivanovich has no care for his immortal soul, but am I to damn my soul, allying myself with devils?
You are a practical man, Vasya said gently. She stepped closer. He knotted his hands together. You did not choose to side with the Tatar for loyalty, but for survival's sake. Now you see that the opposite may be true, that we can win. Under the Khan, you will never be more than a vassal, Oleg Ivanovich. If we win, then you will be a prince in your own right.
It was an effort to keep her voice even. She had begun to shake, was spending too long in midnight. The bear's presence made that worse, too. The chert was a knot of deeper darkness, listening from the shadows.
Witch, you have your brother and your cousin, said Oleg. Are you not content?
No, said Vasya. Summon your boyars and come with us. Oleg's eyes were darting around the tent as though he could not see but sense the bear's presence. The clay lamp guttered. The darkness around it deepened. Vasya aimed a glare at Medved, and the dark retreated a little.
Come with us and have victory, Vasya said.
Maybe a victory, murmured the bear from behind her. Who knows? Oleg was shrinking nearer the lamplight without quite knowing what frightened him.
Tomorrow, said Vasya, have your men fall behind the main body again. We'll be waiting.
After a long silence, Oleg said firmly, My men will stay with Mamai. She heard the echo of her failure in the words, just as the bear let out a sigh of pleased understanding. Then Oleg finished, and Vasya understood.
If I am to betray the general, better to wait until the right moment.
Their eyes met.
I love a clever traitor, said the bear.
Oleg said, My boyars want to fight on the Russian side. I thought it my task to constrain their foolishness, but... Vasya nodded. Had she convinced him to risk his place and his life with naught but tricks and charity and her own dogged faith? She looked him in the face and felt the burden of his belief.
Dmitri Ivanovich will be at Kolomna in a fortnight, she said.
Will you come to him then and lay your plans?
Oleg said, I will send a man, but I cannot go myself. Mamai would suspect.
Vasya said, You can go yourself. I will take you there and back in the course of a single night.
Oleg stared. Then grim humor touched his face. On your mortar?
Very well, witch. But know that even combining our strength, Dmitri and I might as well be two beetles plotting to break a boulder.
Where is your faith? Said Vasya, and smiled suddenly.
Look for me at midnight in 2 weeks. Chapter 31 All the Russias. The men of Rus mustered at Kolomna over the course of 4 gray, chilly days. One by one the princes came, Rostov and Starodub, Polotsk, Murom, Tver, Moscow, and the rest, as the cold rain whispered over the muddy fields. Dmitri Ivanovich set his tent in the middle of the gathering host, and the first night they were all assembled,
he summoned his princes to him to take counsel. They were grim, heavy with fatigue from mustering and marching in haste. It was well after moonset when the last of them crowded into Dmitri's round felt tent, shooting each other wary looks. Midnight was not far off. Outside lay the Russian horse lines, their wagons and their fires stretching in every direction. All that day, the Grand Prince had been getting reports. "The Tatars are assembling here," he said. He had a map. He pointed to a marshy place on the curve of the Don River at the mouth of a smaller tributary. Snipes Field, it was called, for the birds in the long grass. "They are waiting for reinforcements, units from Litva, mercenaries from Kaffa. We must strike before the reinforcements can come up. 3 days' march and battle at dawn on the fourth day, if all goes well." "By how much do they outnumber us now?" demanded Mikhail of Tver. Dmitri did not answer. "We will form two lines," he continued. "Here," he touched the map again. "Spears, shields, to hem in the horses and use the forest to guard our flanks. They do not like attacking in the woods. It turns their arrows." "By how many, Dmitri Ivanovich?" demanded Mikhail again. Tver had been a greater principality than Moscow for most of its history, and rivals for the rest. Alliance did not sit easily on them. Dmitri could not avoid answering. "Twice our force," he said. "Perhaps a little more, but..." Muttering went around the men. Mikhail of Tver spoke up again. He said, "Have you had word of Oleg Vryazan?" "Marching with Mamai." The muttering redoubled. "It matters not," Dmitri went on. "We have men enough. We have the blessing of Holy Sergius." "Enough?" snapped Mikhail of Tver. "A blessing is enough? Perhaps to save our souls when we are slaughtered on the field, but not to win this fight." Dmitri was on his feet. His voice temporarily silenced the men's murmurs. "Doubt the power of God, Mikhail Andreevich? How will we know God is on our side? For all we know, God wants us to be humble, Christ-like, and submissive to the Tatar." "Perhaps," said a calm voice from the flap of the tent. "But if that were the case, would he have sent you the princes of Sierpukhov and of Ryazan too?" Heads swiveled. A few put hands on the hilts of their swords. A light kindled in the Grand Prince's eyes. Vladimir Andreevich walked into the tent. Behind him came Oleg of Ryazan. And behind them both, Brother Alexander, who added, "God is with us, princes of Rus, but there is no time to waste." The Grand Prince of Moscow did not hear the whole tale until late that night, when all the planning was done. He and Sasha rode quietly out of camp, beyond the light and smoke and noise, until they came to a hidden hollow with a low fire burning. As he rode, Sasha noted uneasily that the moon had not yet set. Vasya had made solitary camp and was waiting for them. Her feet were still bare, her face smudged, but she rose with dignity and bowed to the Grand Prince. "God be with you," she said. Behind her, in deeper darkness, stood Pozhar, glowing. "Mother of God," said Dmitri and crossed himself. "Is that the horse?" Sasha had to swallow a laugh as his sister put out a hand to the mare, who promptly laid back her ears and snapped. "A beast out of legend," Vasya returned. The mare snorted disdainfully and moved off to graze. Vasya smiled. "A fortnight ago," said Dmitri, searching her face in the moonlight, "you left at midnight to save one cousin. You came back with an army." "Are you thanking me for it?" she asked. "It was achieved partially by sheer accident, the rest through blundering." Vasya might make light of it, Sasha thought, but it had been a bitter fortnight. Through the midnight darkness, they had ridden fast to Sierpukhov, reducing Vladimir to prayers and muttering. Then had come the frantic mustering of Vladimir's men, the long marches in the rain to reach Kolomna in time, for Vasya could not, she said, take so many men through midnight.
You would be surprised at how many victories come so, said Dmitri.
Vasya was calm under his scrutiny. She and Dmitri seemed to understand each other.
You carry yourself differently, said the Grand Prince.
Half joking, he asked.
Have you come into a realm of your own, in your travels?
I suppose, she said, a stewardship at least, of a people as old as this land and of a strange country, far away. But how did you know?
A wise prince recognizes power.
She said nothing.
You brought armies to my mustering, Dmitri said. If you indeed have command of a realm, then will you bring your own people to this fight, Knyazhna?
The word princess stirred Sasha strangely.
Greedy for more men, Dmitri Ivanovich? Vasya asked.
A little color had come into her face.
Yes, he said. I need every beast, every man, every creature, if we are to win.
Sasha had never seen the likeness between Dmitri Ivanovich and his sister, but he saw it now. Passion, cleverness, restless ambition. She said,
I have paid my debt to Moscow. Are you asking me to gather my own people now and bring them to your battle? Your priests might call them devils.
Yes, I am asking, said Dmitri after the faintest pause. What do you want of me in exchange? She was silent. Dmitri waited. Sasha watched the light on the grass where the golden mare grazed and wondered at the look on his sister's face. Slowly, Vasya said, I want a promise, but not just from you, from Father Sergei as well. Puzzled but not unwilling, Dmitri said,
Then we will go to him in the morning.
Vasya shook her head. I am sorry. I would spare his years, but it must be here, and quickly.
Why here? Dmitri asked sharply. And why now?
Because, said Vasya, it is midnight. There is no time to waste, and I am not the only one who must hear what he says. Sasha went, galloping on his gray tuman, and not long after, he led Father Sergei into the clearing. The moon hung strange and still in the sky. Vasya, waiting for her brother, wondered if Sasha knew that she had caught the four of them in midnight until she chose to ride on or go to sleep. But there was no sleep for her yet that night. While they waited for Sasha, she and Dmitri sat around her sinking fire, passing a skin back and forth, talking low-voiced.
Where do you get your fine horses? Dmitri asked her. First the bay, and now this one.
He was eyeing Pozhar covetously. The golden mare laid back her ears and sidled away.
Vasya said dryly, She understands you, Gosudar. I didn't get her from anywhere. She chose to bear me. If you want to win the allegiance of a horse like her, you would have to go questing through darkness, across 3 times 9 realms. I suggest you concern yourself with your own beleaguered country first.
Dmitri looked undeterred. He had his mouth open on more questions. Vasya rose hastily when the monks appeared and crossed herself.
Father bless, she said. May the Lord bless you, said the old monk.
Vasya took a deep breath and told them what she wanted. Sergei was silent for a long time afterward, and Sasha and the prince watched him, frowning.
They are wicked, said Sergei at last. They are the unclean forces of the earth.
Men are also wicked, Vasya returned passionately, and good, and everything in between. Cherti are, just as men are, just as the earth herself is. Cherti are sometimes wise, and sometimes foolish, sometimes good, and sometimes cruel. God rules the next world, but what of this one? Men may seek salvation in heaven and also make offerings to their hearth spirits to keep their house safe from evil. Did not God make Cherti as he made everything else in heaven and earth?
She spread her hands. This is the price of my aid. Swear to me you will not condemn witches to burn. Swear to me you will not condemn those who leave offerings in their oven mouths. Let our people have both their faiths. She faced Dmitri. So long as you or your descendants sit on the throne of Muscovy, and, to Sergei, your monks are establishing monasteries, building churches and hanging bells. Tell them also to let the people have their two faiths. For your promises, I will go into the night now, and I will bring the rest of Rus to your aid. No one spoke for a long time. Vasya stood silent, straight and severe, and she waited. Sergei had his head bowed, his lips moving in silent prayer. Dmitri said,
"If we do not agree."
"Then," said Vasya, "I will leave tonight. I will spend my days trying to protect what I can for as long as I can. You both will do the same, and we will both be the weaker."
"If we agree, and we win this fight, what happens then?" asked Dmitri. "If I have need of you again, will you come?"
"If you will do as I ask now," said Vasya, "then as long as your reign lasts, when you call, I will come." Again they measured each other.
"I agree," said Dmitri, "if Father Sergei does."
"A strong country cannot afford to have its strength divided, even if its powers are not all of men." Sergei raised his head.
"I will agree also," he said. "The ways of God are strange."
"Heard and witnessed," Vasya said, and then she opened her hand. There was a thin line of blood on the meat of her thumb, black in the dim moonlight. She let her blood fall to the earth, and two figures appeared. One was a man with one eye. The other was a woman with night-colored skin. Dmitri jerked backward. Sasha, who had seen them all along, stood still. Sergei's eyes narrowed, and he muttered another prayer. "We have all witnessed your promise," said Vasya, "and we will hold you to your word." Dmitri and Sergei, looking shaken, took their leave and rode back to their beds in Kolomna. Polonochnitsa said, "I have witnessed these men's promises. Must I linger? I am not Medved. I do not love endlessly the strange doings of men." "No," said Vasya. "Go if you wish. But if I call again, will you come?"
"I will come," said Midnight, "if only to see the end. For you might have their promise, but you must keep your own now and fight."
She bowed and vanished into the night. Sasha lingered with his sister. "Where are you going?" She didn't look up. She was throwing wet leaves over the fire. It went out with a hiss, plunging the clearing into gray starlight. "I am going to go find Oleg and take him back to his men," said Vasya, straightening up. "See that word doesn't get out that he was here. I am sure there are at least a few spies in Dmitri's camp, although," she smiled suddenly, "who would believe it? He was with Mamai today and will be with him tomorrow." She went to the golden mare. Patiently, Sasha followed and said,
"After that, then what do you mean to do?"
She had a hand on the mare's neck. Looking over her shoulder, she countered with another question.
"Where does Dmitri mean to engage the Tatars?"
"They are bringing up their forces at a place called Snipes Field," said Sasha. "Kulikova. A few days' march. Dmitri must engage them before they finish gathering up their reinforcements. 3 days, he says." "If you stay with the army," Vasya said, "I will have no trouble finding it. I'll come back to you in 3 days." "But where are you going?" her brother asked again. "To harry the enemy." She wasn't looking at him when she said it. She was staring beyond him already, frowning into the dark. Pozhar, ears going back and forth, did not for once try to bite her.
Sasha caught her arm and spun her around. The mare shied irritably, blowing. His sister was scraped hollow with weariness, a fey glow in her expression. Vasya. He made his tone cold, an antidote to the reckless laughter lurking in her eyes. What do you think will become of you, living in darkness with devils and doing black magic? I, she shot back, I am becoming myself, brother. I am a witch, and I am going to save us. Didn't you hear Dmitri? Sasha shot a glance beyond the golden mirror to where the one-eyed man watched, only faintly visible in the starlight and midnight darkness. His grip tightened on her arm. You are my sister, said Sasha. You are Maria's aunt. Your father was Pyotr Vladimirovich of Lesnaya Zemlya. If you spend too long alone in the dark, you will forget that you are more than the witch of the wood. You will forget to come back into the light. Vasya, you are more than this night creature, this what, brother? This thing, Sasha went on ruthlessly, with a jerk of his chin toward the watching devil. He wants you to forget yourself. He would be glad if you went mad, went wild, were lost forever in dark woods, like our great-grandmother. Do you know the risk you are running, traveling alone with that creature?
She doesn't, put in the bear, listening.
Vasya ignored him. I am learning, she said. But even if I were not, is there a choice? Yes, Sasha said. Come back to Kolomna with me, and I will look after you. Brother, I can't. Did you not hear my promise to Dmitri? Damn Dmitri, he thinks only of his crown. Sasha, do not be afraid for me. I am, though, he said, for your life and for your soul. They are both in my keeping and not yours, she said gently. But a little of the wildness had gone from her expression. She took a deep breath. I will not forget what you said. I am your sister, and I love you, even wandering in darkness. Vasya, he said, his voice heavy with reluctance, better even the Winter King than that beast.
You both have an exaggerated idea of my brother's good qualities, said the bear, just as Vasya snapped. The Winter King is not here.
In a calmer voice, she went on, for it is not winter. I must use the tools I have. The mare shook her mane and stamped, obviously eager to be gone. We are going, said Vasya to her, as though the mare had actually spoken. Her voice was a little ragged. She pulled away. Farewell, Sasha. She swung to the mare's back and looked down at her brother's troubled face. I won't forget what you told me. Sasha merely nodded. In 3 days, said Vasya. Then the mare bounded forward, bucking, and his sister was at once lost in the night. The devil looked back, winked at Sasha, and followed. Vasya left Oleg where she'd met him, at the edge of the scrubby steppe where his men were encamped, a day's march from Kulikova. Pozhar cow-kicked the Grand Prince of Ryazan as he slid down her golden flank and said very definitely,
That is the last time I carry one of his kind ever again. He is heavy.
Oleg said at the same moment, I will leave riding the horses of legend to you, witch girl. It is like trying to ride a thunderstorm. Vasya could only laugh, she said. If I were you, I'd delay your march to join Mamai. They are going to have a bad few days. I will see you at the battle.
God willing, said Oleg Ivanovich and bowed.
Vasya inclined her head, turned Pozhar, and then they were back on the midnight road. Mother of God, I am tired of darkness, Vasya thought. Pozhar's sure feet made nothing of the night, the changing landscape, but there was no comfort in the surge of the mare's running, her jutting withers and swift strides. Vasya rubbed her face and tried to focus her mind. Her brother's warning had shaken her. He was right. all the anchor stones of her life had gone, home and family, and sometimes it seemed her very self lost.